Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 324 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. Send you over to Jason Rugard, who's got a rundown for us.
All right, on tonight's show, we'll be getting to the big things. That's all this Joker talk, all this young Joker, old Joker, Harley Quinn and Joker movie, getting into that as well as dissecting the worst Labor Day in 17 years, reviews for The Hitman's Bodyguard, T2 3D, Death Note, Rough Night, and a slew of others, along with our thoughts on the trailers for Brawl in Cell Block 99, Killing Gunther, Brad Status, and Super Troopers 2. I had no trivia tonight, and I was going to talk to you about a huge miscalculation, a financial miscalculation, but I'll turn it into a trivia question. I guess we can go right into the topic here. So what actor decided to take upfront money instead of a chunk of the film's overall gross? And this film turned out to be a huge hit in the 70s. And this is an actor that I'm sure he's well off. I mean, he's been around for a long time, but this would have been huge money. Do you know what I'm talking about here? Is that too vague?
Yeah.
Real vague, huh? Right? There was once this guy in this movie about with his gun, and he kissed a girl.
This one time at band camp?
Seriously, it happened twice at band camp. We don't talk about the second time. Let me tell you who this is and what's going on here, because the trivia, it's really not even trivial. It's just, it's sad. It's Donald Sutherland. And what I heard is that they wanted to pay him $35,000 for his two-day role in Animal House, against 15% of the profit, because nobody had any expectations of that movie doing anything. And apparently they came back at one point and offered him like $50,000 and like a quarter percentage of something, because he was the biggest name in the cast. Really, Belushi hadn't even popped yet. Mm-hmm. He would pop, by the time that film was made and released. And he said no, and then I guess he haggled his way to somewhere in the range of 60 to 70,000. The details are a little sketchy, but he lost all participation points, which really lost him about $75 million. I mean, that is one of the great fuck ups of all time.
Well, yeah. Well, how do you know though? He probably wanted the money, you know. Yeah.
He had no faith in that project. Yeah. That's 2 days' work, nonetheless. That's a small, small role. I love his role in Animal House as the stoner English professor. But it's not hard work by any extent. You hear things like Tom Hanks made X, Y, and Z off of Forrest Gump, and Keanu Reeves made a shitload off of this and that. But those are movies that require them to be on set for quite a long time. Even Jack Nicholson making money off of the Batman merchandising is huge. But he was a big part of that movie. Donald Sutherland was barely in Animal House. You don't think of Animal House as a Donald Sutherland movie, right?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Yeah. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about Joker, because Joker is everywhere right now. Are you following all this Joker talk and what DC and Marvel's doing?
I've seen some stuff, but am I following it? Hell no.
Are they just unraveling?
Are you following it? Are you that into the Joker as a character? Are you worried about who's going to portray Joker? What are they going to do with this character?
No, it's so convoluted. If they make a Batman movie and it has no Ben Affleck in it right now, we are really just riding off the rails. And you can have no affinity towards this character.
Yeah. It's just all so screwed up.
I thought they got their shit together with Wonder Woman, and now we're off. They're off in La La Land over here. I don't know what the fuck is going on in the Warner Brothers lot. That's such a professional studio, and they always seem to have had their shit together through all the rough times when Universal couldn't get their act together and Paramount's failing now. And Warner Brothers always had a franchise and always seemed to have a direction. They seem so aimless right now, don't they?
Yeah, but to be fair, they have some of the highest grossing superhero movies of all time.
But what are they doing with their property? They're gonna break that.
Maybe. I mean, they've broken it before and they fixed it. They've always had issues with superhero stuff, right? Have they not? I think so. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do something weird. They're kind of in a bad position with the Ben Affleck stuff. No one knows how that's going to turn out.
To be fair, to go ahead and go back to something you said, though, they did start the game with the superhero franchise. So you have Superman, the original one with Christopher Reeves, all twice. Through Warner Brothers.
They did it twice.
Batman with Michael Keaton.
Yeah, they did it in the 80s. They kept it going, made it even bigger in the 90s, and, you know, killed it. And then in the last decade, right, in 2000s, they did it again. They rebirthed it. And then now Marvel's, you know, essentially getting the big payoff from that, really. But we're starting to see them come back with Wonder Woman, you know, and Suicide Squad and the Superman movies they've done, you know, and may not be great, but they made a shitload of money really so far. So I don't know.
I don't like the idea here that we're talking about Todd Phillips, director of The Hangover and Due Date, going and doing a young Joker film. And it's supposed to be set. Somebody said that Scorsese's involved. It's gonna. I never heard anything about that. But then again, now we're hearing that if this is the same project, there's no word on that, that Leonardo DiCaprio might be interested in playing the Joker. Now I'm interested. Is it just me?
It's just you.
Is it just me? I don't know if it's just me.
Get it. Why? Whoever plays the Joker, at this point, the Joker is a role to me that is just ridiculous. This is like having people play, you know, Captain Jack Sparrow. What are you going to do that's so different, right? Everyone's going to play it weirdly. They're all going to have their own little spin on it. But the character is so well-defined already. I don't know. What are you switching out here for? I mean, what is Leonardo DiCaprio going to do that would make it any better or any more amazing than what really Heath Ledger's already done? And to some extent, what Jared Leto has done with it.
Yeah, well said. And I don't think Todd Phillips is going to bring anything to this material. Joker doesn't have a defined origin or story, and there's so many out there comics. And they can do an interesting job if they focus on the right material. But what I don't like, though, is that now we're going to have a competing Joker movie, but it's a Joker Harley Quinn movie from the creators
of Crazy
Stupid
Love. They don't know
what they're
doing. They're so confused as to even if they want to create a single universe anymore out of these movies. You know, and we're already talking about switching out actors for roles and things. It's like the exact opposite of what Marvel has established you should do, you know. And really, if you have different people playing all these characters and all this stuff, it kind of ruins the specialness of that character, you know.
Agreed. That's what I was trying to say at the top of the conversation. And I think that with the characters that are hidden behind masks, it's one thing, but Marvel has done a great job of establishing that Tony Stark is that actor, that Chris Evans is the Captain America. We don't have multiple ones. Now,
it's not that they can't be replaced either, right? Exactly. I mean, it's definitely set up in such a way as really Marvel moves in like segments. I don't know what do they call it. It's not like waves or something, but don't they have some way of expressing it? I can't.
It's phase.
It's phase. Thank you. Yeah. So they have phases to their thing, which makes sense because, you know, contractually you say this is what we're going to do. Right. And so at some point you could, and there have already been talks about this, killing off the Captain America character, kill him off for a little bit, right? Couple years. You can bring him back.
You can even bring him back as somebody else, which they do.
Exactly.
In the comic book world all the time.
So
they bring him back as some different gender and ethnicity even.
It's safe to hold someone just like they do with James Bond's movies, right? Make that person James Bond for a while, really sell the shit out of it, and then when it's time to change, don't be afraid to change, you know. But certainly don't just, I mean, could you imagine James Bond if it was a new James Bond every single time? They were just fumbling and fucking around, and like, while not a lot of the James Bonds necessarily have anything to do with each other, they're very episodic. But could you imagine if it was totally different, like you had young James Bond and old James Bond, and then sometimes there's middle-aged James Bond, and all this shit was going, it would be so insane to follow. Yeah, you would just be like, well, why? I don't, you know, you have to kind of pick one thing, stick with it, and go with that, you know, unless you're doing like a Harry Potter thing where people actually age throughout it. Otherwise, it's nuts.
It's cinema chaos is what I want to call it. And I think that it's not a good idea. But what I want to get your take on is that you liked Crazy Stupid Love. You're always going to give me
to watch
that
movie.
I'm gonna give it a shot one of these days. I do like their writing and I like all the people in it. But do you like them for this Joker Harley Quinn movie that they're going to write and direct?
Yeah,
basically a quasi-sequel to this.
I think I'll be fine with it as long as they write it well, you know, which I think they could, you know, and we've already seen a lot of people who don't expect to be any good. Look at the last few Avengers movies. You just really don't know why the hell they would pick these people to either write or direct these things. Right. I mean, sometimes it's right on point. You're like, yes, that's, well, Joss Whedon. Oh, that's surprising, you know, but, sometimes it's just like, where are these guys from? And they come out and they do a bang up job. So
yeah, I'm
willing to let
Spider-Man
it go
for that. The last Spider-Man was written by one of the kids. I can't think of the guy's name, but he was one of the nerdy kids in Freaks and Geeks. And you're like, who knew that you could write this script? Like, who at Marvel said, that's the guy, give him the shot.
Yeah.
Like,
it's hard to say
the best script of the year.
I mean, Crazy Stupid Love's written very well, whether you like, romantic comedies or not. The one thing I don't think there's even argument about is that it's a well-crafted story.
Right. I'll give you that. I want to see it. I will see it. And I will probably watch their incarnation of these characters more than a Todd Phillips one. Although I'm curious.
That's the one that I really just don't understand. Todd Phillips is so established. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even know what the hell he would necessarily do with it. I feel like he would wind up beating the shit out of the characters.
Which was a huge problem with all
the
movies.
Which is what he does, yeah. Which is fine if you're making kind of like a dark comedy, which he kind of tends to, even on his lighter comedies, tends to a bit of darkness. But the Joker's not a comedy, right? He's not even a comedian, you know? I mean, he's like a clown kind of, but he's not funny, right? Necessarily.
No clowns, yeah. Are funny.
I don't
movies.
Know. Weird.
Even it, you know, there's no funny clowns.
No, you don't. I laugh all the time at it. He's so funny. Pennywise, hysterical.
Shakes the Clown was the last clown I laughed at. All right, let's talk about summer 2017 coming to an end. This is Labor Day weekend as we record this, and they are projecting that it's going to be the lowest grossing Labor Day since 1998, when something about rain.
What's new that's out?
That's the problem. I saw Hitman's Bodyguard this weekend, and actually, it was, if not sold out, very close to sold out in multiple places. And I saw a lot of traffic.
God, it's so weak.
This is a huge heat wave going on right now, too. In free air conditioning or cheap air conditioning.
So you're telling me that the $10 million this movie made this weekend all came from your area?
No, man. This thing, I think, went to like 12 and a half. No, I'm telling you, people are still going to the movies. The projected death of movies is way, way overhyped this summer.
Oh, naturally. But it's almost as if summer – this is like the first year I've seen where they almost just kind of gave up. Like, there's just no content left, and a lot of that stuff isn't that great. So it's just an unfortunate year, I think, but – yeah, I would agree with you. I don't think people are going to stop going to the movies because of this year. Now, if they do this a couple times, maybe we might have a little bit more of an issue.
Well, the two highest grossing films of the year on a global basis are Fast and Furious 8, or I should say, Beauty and the Beast at number one, and Fast and Furious 8, both released in spring. Something to think about there. If those had been released in summer, this would be a whole different. They could have been released in summer, although they did very well in their dates. But I think that there a lack of product, a front loading. Somebody could have moved The Mummy to early August, and it may have fared even a little bit better just because it was out and had less competition. But there was a cannibalization process. And while we sit here and bitch, I mean, you can say this is dead and that's dead, but the product was shit.
Well,
Transformers didn't bomb because it was the fifth one. It bombed because it was a bad movie.
Let's just look at it this way. Despicable Me made $1 billion worldwide. So if you're going to tell me that there's an end is coming to theatrical distribution of movies, just remember in this terrible year, Despicable Me 3 made $1 billion. Like it's not the end. Clearly,
well,
as far as everyone's talking about Wonder Woman and stuff, breaking all these records and doing all this amazing things. That's not the only movie out there. You know, there are actually many movies that may have made more money than Wonder Woman, and a lot that made just under, you know, but domestically it's done pretty gangbusters for this year, especially.
Well, you can even talk about other movies that were under the radar, but still did very well for themselves, like Baby Driver, Atomic Blonde. These are things that came out and had $100 million gross, $50 million gross, but compared to their budgets and expectation and release.
Well, everyone everyone seems to want to judge everything based on, you know, a $400 million domestic run, you know, $800 million to $1 billion global run, right? And so like, the movies you're saying are obviously smaller movies, right? But look at Annabelle, right? Annabelle just made a shitload of money. So yeah, there's plenty of examples of movies that have done extremely well this year.
Yeah, I would agree. And they are, I think that they just overestimate that nobody's going. We saw a lot of people at the movies. Like I said, heat wave, people still go. And there was a, you know, obviously hurricane in Texas and all that going on. So sure. A lot of theaters shut down.
Look
and
at
that
this
help
weekend,
either.
Though. Look at the movies out. I mean, it's the third weekend for Hitman's Bodyguard, number one movie. Fourth weekend for Annabelle, number two. You know, fifth weekend for the number three movie. It's just like, good Lord.
Well, yeah,
there's just nothing new.
The only wide release this weekend was the 40th anniversary of Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Right. Yeah, I know. We had that, and we had a TV show, Inhumans, right, playing in IMAX. So, like, those were the big releases. Yeah, it's obviously not going to be a big weekend. It's just so weird, though. It's such a... Well, I guess with the hurricanes, it's not so prime anymore, but it seems like some of the movies that have already come out, maybe why was nothing positioned to come out this weekend with a 3-day weekend? Why was there nothing?
Well, usually there's a genre offering of something. I mean, this is like in years past, this is when a Van Damme film would be scheduled or something like Getaway, you know, something terrible that they knew was going to be gone in 2 weekends,
right.
A Highlander movie.
But
there really
you have
was
a
no
much
genre
better
offering
shot
that.
of You just have a – it feels like this isn't that bad of a weekend. It feels like you'd have a good shot with something that you think maybe you would be a little questionable. But it seems like everything, as a word that you've been using, has been cannibalizing each other, right? We've had huge – all the huge movies opened up like all on the same weekends.
Within a 6-week period there,
yeah.
Between early May and honestly late June, if you will, it was done.
Yeah,
July
and it's interesting,
releases.
You know, they're comparing like seasons and whatnot and saying this is the worst season, or obviously this is the worst weekend, but this is a really bad season in general, summer season in general. But you have to think, well, are you comparing we're comparing apples to apples here, right? Whereas are we comparing the same months to the same months? Because now we're way ahead of where we used to be. I mean, things are opening way sooner.
All right, let's talk about reviews, some movies that are out in theaters right now. First, I want to talk about The Hitman's Bodyguard, the number one film in the country for the last 3 weeks, although it's only made $60 million. It's been fairly uncompetitive. But this is no surprise. This is the kind of movie back in the 90s that would have made $200 million when they were called Rush Hour and anything of the like. Recently, we just watched Lethal Weapon, and this is such a Lethal Weapon wannabe that it was hard for me to really get into this movie for a couple of reasons. One, Ryan Reynolds is funny. The guy has just got a way of saying things, and I like him. Samuel Jackson is not particularly funny. He's still, you know, the baddest motherfucker, and he still has the trademark on that line. But my problem with the movie is it's well directed by Patrick Hughes in action sense. His second unit does a great job. He does a lot of cool things, and he's got a good ear for music. He infuses a lot of scenes with some good music. Nice choices there. But as far as the script goes and the bantering that is the whole movie is sold on, I didn't buy their chemistry. I didn't think that Samuel Jackson's funny. I thought that he should have been the serious one. It's like if they had the Rush Hour movies and Chris Tucker was playing it straight and Jackie Chan was the funny one. It makes no sense. You know, why are you doing this? And the times that Reynolds gets to be funny, he shines in it. It just, to me, was an odd movie, a very minor movie, and a forgettable movie. But at least it's doing well because it's a throwback to me. It's the kind of movie that would have done well 20 years ago. So I kind of liked it, but I can't recommend it on any level. Yeah, that's my review.
That's
that,
about so. What it's doing. So
mediocre as a mother.
Yeah.
And why is Selma Hayek in it? No one will be able to tell you that.
I didn't even know she was in it.
Thank you. Tell me about Rough Night. I didn't get a chance to see this because it was gone within 2 weeks. This is The movie that they thought Girls Trip was going to be, I think, right? They thought it was going to be the $100 million grossing female comedy of the summer.
I guess. I mean, you always think that of every movie probably, but yeah, this is just such an unfunny movie. And it's a comedy. This reminds me of kind of what happened with The Hangover, except instead of making it all the way to the third movie, they just started out as shitty as the third Hangover. You know, it really just, it's just not funny. Like, there's not really a lot of comedy in it. It's just kind of a little too dark. The characters are kind of just shit on by the movie the whole time. And I don't know. There are moments of, like, it's too dramatic, you know, for certain moments where people are yelling at each other and some character finally gets their big moment and it's like just a screaming match or something. And, you know, they're upset with some other character because they have grown apart as friends or something. It's like, why is that in this fucking movie? You know, this is a comedy about a group of girls and they've accidentally killed some guy. And, why do I give a shit about them personally, you know, as characters? I don't. So, not good. I don't know what else to say. I mean, even like Kate McKinnon is not funny in it. The whole thing where she's from Australia is fucking stupid.
A little bit of her goes a long way. I learned that on Saturday Night Live, and I like her immensely.
She can be very good, but it's just, there's nothing for her to do in this. You know, Jillian Bell, I like a lot. I think she's very funny. She's probably the funniest person in this movie, but again, they don't give her very much to do. You know, there's not really a lot of comedy in this movie, and which I don't understand how, like, Scarlett Johansson was in this, read the script, made this movie, and then was what told, I'm guessing, was a comedy from the beginning. I don't know how, but they're billing this as a comedy. It's not comedic.
It looks like Very Bad Things, but yet with a female twist. And maybe a more modern twist, because I think there's a gay character in it as well. And that didn't happen in Very Bad Things.
Wow.
So they gotten two things new.
I mean, it's just no. I mean, it was gone for a reason. It's a movie, I think everyone will agree, is just bad. So I would say don't watch it. Skip it. At all costs. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, I wanted to see it, but I've heard nothing but bad things about it. I want to talk to you about T2 3D. Did you know this was out? Of course you did. We talked about it on our show.
Yeah.
Did you go see it?
No.
You son of a bitch.
Too far. Let me tell you about it. Too far. You're right.
Luckily there was, it's on 300 screens, 350 screens in the US, and two of those were equal. I was literally in equal distance of both two things, like 15 miles in both directions.
You were sandwiched between two Schwarzeneggers.
Oh man, if only from 1992. I went out and caught it, and I gotta like kind of tell you the story behind the screening because it adds to the screening. So let me tell you that. I saw it with a 13-year-old kid who had never seen any of the Terminator movies and a 9-year-old little girl who was in the same boat who asked me if it was kid appropriate. I had to say, well, it's kind of a movie about a boy and his dog, really, is how you got to look at it. And this smart little girl said, oh, is it like a Big Brother movie? And I said, yeah, kind of. So these kids had no idea about the movie. And when we came out of it, they sat, you know, through the whole thing. It's in 3D and the whole nine. And we came out of it and I said, what'd you guys think? And the little girl says, I loved it. I almost cried at the end. And I just wanted to, like, I just wanted to do that. Nice. Gotcha. You know what I mean? Because it still works. And I asked the boy, what'd you think? And he said, it was really good, but it's not my favorite. And he just saw The Matrix recently and his mind's blown.
Oh, boy.
You know what I mean? Remember that when you first saw The Matrix?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that still holds up. But I told him, you know, if you're thinking back, this is kind of the tie-in. The history of this movie was this was the golden standard for good sci-fi. And then The Matrix came and kind of reset the bar. But this was that experience for our generation, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big – well, I mean, sure. It's like Star Wars, you know, Terminator 2, The Matrix. I would – wouldn't necessarily compare them that way. I don't know that the Matrix raised the bar, but it certainly made things slicker, I guess.
Yeah. To me, these are hallmarks of the genre.
It's sure.
Like you have T2, yeah. You have the Matrix, you have these things that are just, you know, fucking fantastic things. But the movie itself, let's talk about here. You're talking about a 26-year-old movie, and as I'm watching it, I'm noticing a couple of things. One, the 3D that James Cameron is able to do is not only in your face 3D, because a little girl was grabbing at the screen, but it's depth of field 3D. Where, right. For instance, in the beginning, when the police officer is responding to where the T-1000 has landed and he's in that electrical area where the alleyway goes down, it looks like that street goes down as far as it does in real life. I was more impressed with the depth of things on the screen as opposed to them being in my face, which they were. And a couple times, you really notice it with when the helicopter's circling Cyberdyne and all those kind of things. But the sound design in this movie is fucking flawless. It is so loud and well designed and moves, and it's still a chase movie at heart, but I still have to tell you, it gets bogged down when Linda Hamilton's in the mental ward. It needs still, this was not the director's cut. This is the original theatrical 136 minutes, I believe. It still, to me, is always slowed down in two places, when they're in the mental hospital and when they're in Juarez later. And I,
yeah,
those two spots always have bugged me in the movie, and they still do. But yet, it's because I've seen this movie so many times. I think if it's your virgin experience with the movie, it's not a problem. But I think that there's a lot of things, and because none of these kids had seen the first one, they were fine with the story. They got it because there was enough of, because I think because of those scenes that kind of tell you, that are filling you in, but we already know what goes on. So I don't know. One of my favorite movies of all time, though. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
Schwarzenegger, fucking awesome back in the day. I forgot how big of a – I'm watching it and I forgot how big the movie star was. We were talking about Gibson and whole idea of like a supermodel celebrity. Mm-hmm. Watching that, and I thought like it wasn't Thor. It wasn't a super – it was this fucking guy who was a goddamn cartoon who was a superhero.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got nostalgic for the time period and the fact that this movie could just be out and just doing gangbuster business, and it still holds up 26 fucking years.
Yeah, later. I mean, I would love for that. I would love to go and see a movie because it's a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. But that doesn't happen anymore. Nah, it just doesn't really happen anymore.
You know, 20 years ago, speaking of 18 years ago, or is it 17 now? that was 98. When is 98? 19 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I looked at that and I thought, knockoff. I remember seeing that in the theater 19 years ago this weekend. And there's no way they could release that today.
No. Yeah, it doesn't matter who. Leonardo DiCaprio could headline that and they'd be like, nah.
We might have to do a record. I highly recommend T2 3D. It'll be on Blu-ray soon. This was kind of a release that just prepped the DVD Blu-ray release. But if you missed it in theaters, which obviously you did because it only played for five days on AMC screens, Then it was an opportunity missed. Tell me about Death Note. This is the Netflix that's available in everyone's home right now, a Netflix horror film. Or is it a horror film? What's going on with this?
Yeah, so it's kind of it's a horror film. It's definitely has its moments of blood and guts and whatnot. But I personally liked the movie, and I've read why it's getting, you know, so much bad reviews and things. And I've never seen the anime or read the manga. So I don't know. I was coming at this. I knew what it was, you know, but I had no idea any definition of the characters necessarily. So, and I thought they did a good job with it. I enjoyed it. I would watch a sequel. I hope they do make one. I don't know. I liked it. I liked the world. I liked what they did with it. It's very kind of Whedon-esque, you know, in the sense of like any of those things, I guess, even like Twilight, you know, to some degree.
Adam Weingart,
you know, it's the kids. Right? Yeah, it's Adam Weingart.
I like him. I liked You're Next quite a bit. I think this guy's extremely clever within these genre confines. Is that
what's going on? It's similar to Your Next, you know, in the sense that it has killings, like that. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, it's clearly not his, you know, completely, it's adaptation, but it does, work within those confines of like, a horror movie that's also about, kids, right? You know, young people kind of growing up and getting along. I mean, not really. There's a lot. How do I explain? You really have to see this. I think people should watch this, just regardless of whether, you know, you believe the bad reviews or not. You should see it. There's a lot that happens and it moves really quickly. And I really don't want to give anything away on it because I was surprised at it. It's such a stupid idea, right? The Death Note. It's a book that basically has a demon attached to it. And if you, whatever you write, you have to write a name in the book and then how the person dies, you know, and the demon will kill the person for you. There are all types of rules like written in the book, like how this works and what you have to do, this and that. And so everyone's kind of working against this kid in a way, even the demon, right? It's kind of like, he's up to something else, you know, all these other things, people are up to something else, right, in this. And it, I just can't believe that that anyone would come up with that simple of an idea and then go just full on out on the edge with it, in a way that just expanded like the storyline to an incredible degree. And it was just like, holy shit, like this is actually like some kind of an epic like thing that's going on here, and people are at war, you know, and he's trying to protect himself, but at the same time he's trying to be a good guy but by being a bad guy, you know. And there's just so much going on in it. I was really impressed.
Well, this guy has done impressive work, like I said, working within the genre confines. I think he's part of the new wave. There's always a new wave, I feel. Every 10 years, there's a new wave of horror directors. And that's how we got the torture porn movement. And, you know, James Wan is part of that even new wave. And there's a lot of guys that came out of that, inspired even by the Japanese ultra gory stuff. And Adam Weingart and his friends or his collaborators, his peers that he did the VHS series with, they all do extremely interesting movies. But not just horror movies, or just movies. You know, I would watch your next. Yeah. And granted, it has the box art of a horror movie.
Well, that
is clever.
That is very much a horror movie. This, on the other hand, it has horror in it, but it's not necessarily a horror movie. So I will say that. So this is a little bit more. This is a step away from your next. But as you say, it's written well. It's clever.
This is a
it's
Netflix
not
original,
it's not as
correct?
Simple as. You're next. Yeah. Netflix original.
So it's available out there for everybody. Check it out.
It's out there. Yeah. Check it out. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was good.
What's up with Naked? This is the one with Marlon Wayans where he's running around. he's reading Groundhog's Day.
This
basically.
Is Groundhog's Day. Yeah.
With
this
that dream when you wake up naked.
I mean, honestly, he wrote this. It's fucking terrible.
It looks terrible. This is like something that Pauly Shore would have
wrote. To a degree, yeah, to a degree that it's surprising. I mean, the groundhog tropes that they use in this and use over and over again are just, I mean, God. This is one of those movies that rips off Groundhog's Day and makes Groundhog's Day look like a fucking masterpiece, you know? It's just not good. It's really not funny. It's boring. You know, it has Regina Hall in it, for crying out loud, and they kind of sideline her as just this girl that he's getting married to. So Regina Hall's fucking funny. Yeah,
she is funny.
And they don't use her to any degree whatsoever, other than she's in the movie.
Because they were in the scary movies together, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
What's unfortunate is that Marlon Wayans has the goods. He's made some great spoof movies. I think that 50 Shades of Black is really underrated.
And this would have been better as a spoof movie for Groundhog's Day rather than a straightforward romantic comedy.
And he's got a television show that's doing well, too. I think people are putting that on and falling asleep. I'm pretty sure.
Maybe. His show is – I haven't seen it, but it is actually surprisingly getting itself out there somehow.
Yeah, it's doing well in the ratings. I don't understand. I swear people are just like – literally falling asleep in front of the television.
Oh, but I mean, let's be honest. You know, Kevin Can Wait is doing well in the ratings too, and that's god awful.
Good about god awful. I caught a couple episodes of The Ranch. That is fucking god awful.
But I like The Ranch.
Oh, you would. That's like,
but it is god awful.
Do you know what I hate to admit is that I've seen every 100 episodes of Anger Management, the Charlie Sheen
and that
show,
is
and that
god
is
awful.
God awful.
I know. So, you just can't get around it sometimes, but sometimes you like that shit. You know, I don't know. The Ranch to me is just easy to watch, but
it's comfort food. You put it on while you're eating and you're getting rid of
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, it's almost easy to watch because it is so bad. If it actually put a lot of effort into actually being good, I probably wouldn't really like it because it's not an idea that lends to like something that I would really give a shit about.
It took me 4 episodes to realize that was Deborah Winger, the same person from Tears in the Deer. I was like, that's Deborah Winger? Oh, fuck, yeah. Did they get her? Who thought, hey, we can get Sam Elliott and Deborah Winger for
this? She's not even good in it. She's just in it. She's literally just kind of there. I mean, Sam Elliott's really the only one but he's good in, he's just good all the time. You know, he could read the phone book and be like, wow.
Well, I just believe what he says. Just, always.
Wow. That's what I mean. He's just
an
authority good
when he speaks. Yeah. I mean, seeing him and stuff. He was great. Whenever he would pop up in a movie in the 80s, usually a bad movie, it got a little better, you know? Okay, let's talk about The Bad Batch. This was an art house film that we had talked about the trailer of a while back, directed by a female, which is getting a lot of press movies now that are directed by females, especially after Patty Jenkins had her success and the thing she's going through and redefining what female directors are going to get paid and kind of power they have now in Hollywood. This is on the independent level and a very well-renowned female director. How's the film?
At this point in time, this is going to be on my top 10 list for 2017.
Whoa.
I really liked it. It's just food for thought through the whole thing. And it's very 90s independent where it wanders around. But it does it in a way that's smart. And in a way where it'll take a left turn. You're just like, where the fuck is this going? And then suddenly it'll turn back around and that's exactly where it's going. Well, that's interesting. You know, we follow this character for a while. We follow that character for a while. And it's an extremely fucked up movie. Like it essentially follows, the Suki Waterhouse, character. That's that actress who plays this character named Arlen, and she's part of the Bad Batch. The Bad Batch is basically a chain-linked, fenced-off area in the desert somewhere. I think it's like supposed to be Arizona or something, you know, but this is where they throw the people that are just, they can't rehabilitate. You know, they're just useless to society. It's kind of like what they used to use Australia for. So you just, it's like the leper colony, these guys are no good. So they throw them in there and they really are fucking no good, but the performances here are interesting. They take you through a very long, kind of drawn out story. How could I even say it? I mean, this chick goes through so fucking much, like just in the beginning of this, and she just gets totally fucked up, for anyone who's seen the trailer, you know. But I mean, Jason Momoa's great in this. We follow his character for a while. He's basically part of this, what they call these bridge people, but they live in like this broken down airplane. It's actually like a whole airfield of just old airplanes that these people have lived in. And these people are cannibals and shit. So they grab people and basically eat them. But there's also a city run by Keanu Reeves, who's also very good in this. That's called Comfort. And that's a place that's protected. People have banded together and they've protected themselves from these bridge people, these cannibal people, Jim Carrey is fantastic as this old hermit guy who just kind of wanders around the desert. It's so good. He's really unrecognizable. They do make up on Keanu Reeves too, to make him, seem a little weird. And his character is so fucking weird too. And like I said, Jason Momoa is just Jason Momoa, but he's big and scary. It's just really good. Like I know I'm kind of like talking in circles with them, but that's how the movie is. It kind of runs you around. You don't really know where it's going to go or how things are going to work out. And it just worked out in such a 90s independent way in the end. Just totally, you know, something that just would never really happen in real life, but in this universe somehow seemed to make sense.
You know, you said it reminded me of some 90s movies, and just the look of it and feel of it reminded me of something that Greg Araki, remember that guy? Akari, I think it's his name. He did like the Doom Generation and things like that in the 90s. Mm-hmm. He did very nihilistic. I remember one of his films, it was the Doom Generation. It said, photographed on location in hell. You know, it was like, and you felt like that because it had that. It kind of like the guy who did Kids, Larry Clark Gummo, and things like that.
I mean, that's exactly what it's like. You know, it's very similar to those types of stories that seem to kind of like Kids, you know, seems to meander. But it doesn't, you know, it's actually not. And then this movie has great themes in it and things that if you're, you know, one of those people like me, you watch a movie and you're like, oh, what does this mean? And like, well, what is this saying? What is that saying? And this movie's chock full of that. But it's not an in your face thing, you know? So I fully expect people to really dislike and hate this movie. But I'm going to tell you to watch it anyways, because I thought it was great.
I'm definitely going to watch it. I like Southland Tales, and that movie got no respect.
Sure, very.
This looks like right up my alley.
Similar to that kind of stuff. You know?
But to be honest, it looks like right up your alley, too. That's why I was curious on what your take was.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a streaming online pick of the week. Do you want to go first? Do you have anything? You want me to go first?
Death Note. Watch Death Note. I don't know.
Oh, you're throwing the D Note out there.
Don't watch Naked.
Don't watch Naked, he says. Yeah, that's actually too widely available right now, as far as I'm concerned. I got to throw the big shout out to Crackle right now, which is hosting exclusively the Dolph Lundgren film Kill It, where he's basically Van Helsing, and it's so bad it's got to be seen. I am streaming online pick of the week is Dolph Lundgren's Crackle exclusive Kill It. And Trevor's is much more distinguished with Death Note. Our tastes vary extremely tonight. We're talking about the highs and lows of you know, the independent film of Bad Batch, and we're talking about The Hitman's Bodyguard. So
yeah, and the less you know about Bad Batch, don't read anything about it. I told you enough. Just watch it, because I went in pretty blind to it. If you've seen the marketing and the trailers for it, there's a reason they don't tell you a lot about it. I don't know. It's very much about the journey. So don't read about it. Just watch it.
It's a movie that's going to grow in popularity after the fact when that becomes more widely available.
It's something that stuck with me.
All right, let's do Trailer Addict.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay. We're prepared.
Okie dokie there.
Not a big Trailer Addict this time. Just a little one.
I just want to circle back in something here and let you know that while we were on air, there was an earthquake centered 0 miles from here, which shook the house. A little mystery solved there. Just got to update. So we're podcasting through earthquakes around here, have you know? Or it's North Korea testing a hydrogen bomb. We don't know. Let's talk about Trailer Addicts, though. Hope we're still alive to see these. Let's talk about Brawl in Cell Block 99. Vince Vaughn, apparently, thinking he buffed up, but because there's lines of dialogue that suggest that, but I didn't really see anything that suggested that.
Yeah, he seemed like Vince Vaughn to me.
It looked like Vince Vaughn playing Hitman. I mean, what the fuck? It didn't, you know, once I saw the title credit in this trailer that said from the writer director of Bone Tomahawk, I thought, oh, that's why it's so weird and like makes no sense.
Super violent, but very weird.
Yeah, stylized.
Yeah, so this is getting a lot of buzz. People are saying, you know, Vince Vaughn's unrecognizable, which it's a fucking joke to me. Like, if Vince Vaughn walked down the street like that, I'd recognize him immediately. No problem.
100%. Yeah, he hasn't like gone out of method acting for this role on any level.
Well, there's just no makeup or anything. I mean, he looks good in it. I'll admit, like acting wise, and it seems like an interesting story. Although I'm not still completely sure what the fuck the story is. Why is it called Brawl in Cell Block 99? I have no idea. So I don't get it. It seems like talk about a meandering storyline. This seems like one that I'm not sure it would be the good kind.
Yeah, the trailer meandered. So I can only imagine the film does. I will follow Vaughn on his more dramatic conquests. I did like Clay Pigeons. I didn't mind him in the Psycho redo. I don't think it's as bad as everyone says it is. And the one I really always liked that nobody ever seemed to ever give any props to was Return to Paradise. I thought he was really good in that movie. And it never got, even with Joaquin Phoenix in it, it never got the kind of push that I thought it should have deserved. And then he blew up as the goofy guy. And I think he kind of fell into that role. I think there is a good dramatic actor in him somewhere. Obviously, we have Swingers, but still, that's Vince Vaughn. That's Vince Vaughn playing Vince Vaughn to me. I don't really think he's great in Swingers. I just think he's Vince Vaughn. I know that's the one that made him, but Christ, right. You know, that's the archetype. You know, let's move on. Let's talk about Killing Gunther, Schwarzenegger's mockumentary about assassins trying to kill him. Written and directed by Taron Killam and featuring half the Saturday Night Live cast. This looks like dog shit.
I will see it. I'm holding out hope that it's decent, but this is just confusing. I'm fairly certain Schwarzenegger is not in it very much.
Yeah, I would say the same. They used every bit of framing, every little frame they had of him.
I know. I did. It had its moments, I'll admit, where I thought, okay, that's interesting. This could work. But for the most part, it just looked really boring and stupid. Not right? Funny. I mean, I like the ending when they kept blowing shit up. They're like, I think it's done. And then there was one more.
I still think it looks like a Thunder Dice skit that goes as hard as the
Yes, that's exactly what it looks like. I mean, when I first heard about this movie, I thought, oh, this will be awesome. I had no idea it was a mockumentary thing. I didn't know. It ruins it. It ruins the whole thing.
Absolutely. You're a completionist here. You've seen every Schwarzenegger movie, right? You saw Maggie.
Yeah.
You saw the one with the plane crash?
Not yet. Actually, I have not seen that one yet.
Okay. Because I haven't seen Maggie or the plane crash one either, and we're both big fans of this guy. So we'll both stumble upon this.
I will see it. And I will see this too, but this. Yeah, you can't really, especially after having seen Maggie, it really kind of turned me off of seeking anything out that he's in that doesn't seem like it's going to live up to it. Cause I don't want to do that to myself. You know,
let yourself down like that. No, believe me. Yeah, I've been there with some stuff today. Believe me. I've had my get Carters. Okay. I've had my drivens.
Yeah. It's just like, fuck man. You can, God, what happened? Like, you can't pick a fucking movie anymore?
Ugh. Guy's 70 fucking years old, man.
He could still read, he can still pick things that are good.
I think
there has to be a lot of people out there who really want to work with Schwarzenegger. Just period. And you're telling me Taron Killam is the fucking guy?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, give me a break.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Super Troopers 2, the long gestating sequel to the cult classic, or the cult hit, I should say. I was never a huge Super Troopers fan.
How dare you?
And I don't think that Super Troopers 2 looks all that great.
Oh, you're crazy. This looks great.
Does it really?
I think this is going to be super funny. I'm glad to have all these guys back in a movie again. I've liked the vast majority of the stuff that this Broken Lizards guys have done. I'm good to go. I'm good to have them in something good. I mean, granted, the quality dropped off movie after movie.
Yeah.
But you gotta admit, I mean, Beer Fest is fucking funny.
So is Club Dread.
I love Club Dread. The Slammin' Salmon's is kind of, you're pushing it. Yeah. This looks funny again. This looks good. And I love the throwbacks to the original that they have in here. And it's really more of a teaser than an actual trailer, but still, it was more than enough to get me excited.
We heard it, folks. Trevor's aroused over there. I, on the other hand, take a little bit more to get turned on and excited. Let's see if the next one will do it for us. And that's Brad's Status, an Amazon Studio original starring Ben Stiller in another one of his seemingly infinite movies where he is a lost, arrested development, you know, overgrown adolescent. I'm getting a little tired of these from him, although this trailer does look good, and I'm kind of intrigued by it.
I can't decide if this looks good or not, because it does get confused as to, do I give a shit about Brad or his fucking father? Whose story is this? And ultimately, is this going to get bogged down because of that as an issue? Like, am I going to have to go off on little side excursions here where that I just don't care about?
It just looks very minor to me and not nearly – when the music at the end kicked up, I was like, I've heard that fucking track in so many of these type of movies.
It reminds me a lot of God, what was that? The one with the pancakes with Steve Carell.
Oh, yeah, Dan in Real Life.
Dan in Real Life. It reminds me a lot of that. I mean, when you say minor and stuff, it reminds me of that.
I mean, it doesn't remind you of Greenberg or While We Were Young.
Greenberg is fantastic. While We Were Young is fantastic. Okay. This doesn't look like that. This. I mean, it could be maybe. It's possible, but it.
I mean,
it
the type of
like,
role that that's. First of all, Greenberg
yes,
is
course.
Streaming.
Of course,
Greenberg's streaming right now on Netflix. If anybody hasn't seen it, put that immediately on your queue, along with The Squid and the Whale. Both by Noah Baumbach, who did While We Were Young, but
he's
Greenberg is fantastic.
Stiller has definitely been typecast in this type of role, not even necessarily this type of movie, but just this type of role—the down and out kind of a guy that makes a comeback, right? I mean, that's definitely been a character ever since There's Something About Mary, right? He's been playing, and even before that, really, he's been playing characters like that. So
he's been playing the same character in comedies and dramas.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you.
Nobody else gets to do that. You think Jim Carrey stretched?
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I don't fully understand why this is necessarily a movie, I guess. It's one of those for me. I don't get, why is this a story I need to know?
Exactly. Well, that's how I felt about Manchester by the Sea, and that one I was sort of. That's how like accolades.
So what do you know? But I'm just, for me, that's what I. That's my question. Yeah.
What do we know? What do you know, buddy? You don't know shit. We don't know shit. Well, that's gonna wrap up our podcast tonight for episode 324. Because officially, we don't know shit. We podcasted through an earthquake tonight, and we have been here to give you guys the latest in reviews, trailers, and topics in the movie world. As always, check it at moviemavericks.com for past podcasts and reviews. We want to thank you all for continued listening out there wherever you may be getting this podcast. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, warp 9. Engage!